Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Welcome back in. It's Spencer German, Jake Volnick filling in for Ken and Anthony this morning on New Year's Eve here on The Fan. And we are excited to go on out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is a staple guest at this time every single week during the season. And we're excited to pick his brain on all things Cleveland Browns, former Cleveland Brown, John Greco joining us on the show. John, we just had a very emphatic conversation about, as I've gotten older, New Year's Eve has gotten worse and worse for me. It's just sitting on the couch now with the kid upstairs sleeping. Are you a New Year's Eve guy?
Good morning, guys. I wouldn't necessarily call me a New Year's Eve guy. I used to be. I am knocking on the doorstep of 40, as I will turn that in March. But actually, we do have plans. The family's involved. We're going to a friend's house that's having a New Year's Eve get-together with, you know, all of the food and libations and different things. But it starts early, which leads me to believe that they want all the kids out of there at a certain time. So my guess is I'll be laying in bed either watching the ball drop or watching the inside of my eyelids at midnight, depending on if I can make it up or not. But technically, we do have plans, at least for the start of it.
I guess that's my hope, John, is that, like, right now, because I have a 2.5-year-old at home. So, like, right now, like, there's no, like, taking the kids somewhere, like, being up late. I hope that as my kids get older, it can be like, okay, we're going to go with another family or like with a group of people and like we'll all be there together at a house and all the kids will be there, and then that makes it a little bit better experience. That sounds like a much more enjoyable experience than just like tonight I'm probably just going to be sitting on my couch watching the ball drop like you mentioned.
Definitely.
So I guess with the draft coming up now and the Brown season basically wrapped up other than, 18.5-point underdogs coming up against the Ravens, anybody excited for that? No, probably not. Top three pick in the draft, more than likely, would you be taking a quarterback with that spot if you're the Browns, or would you be looking elsewhere?
That's the million-dollar question, guys. And, you know, we obviously know the contract situation with Sean Watson and the way that they restructured things. It's, obvious that he will be in the quarterback room, you know, going into the 2025 season. As far as a rookie quarterback, you know, there seems to be two names that are kind of leading the, conversations in Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. But there's other teams, you know, jockeying for those spots. And outside of the Patriots, the other teams that are jockeying for those spots need quarterbacks. So I'm curious to see how things will shake out. The fact that, you know, the spread on this game is what it is alarming. I thought division game, you know, the way that the Browns have played against the Ravens recently, that it would at least be more competitive than that. But obviously Vegas knows something that we all don't. But I don't know in the draft, because there are other glaring holes that need to be addressed. And likely will be, you know, now that the Browns actually have draft picks. But early on, if you go, let's assume that there's no changes upstairs and in the coaching staff, at least major shakeouts. Let's assume you take a young quarterback, you know, then I think the time clock has to immediately start ticking, and they have to bring this guy in, develop him on the fly, and people are going to want to see immediate results, like you're seeing in Washington, like the glimmer of hope you saw in Atlanta the other night with Michael Penix. I think the Browns fans and brass are going to want to see immediate results, like some of these other teams with young quarterbacks have seen this year, and that falls on coaching. So We'll see. I don't know. I think obviously left tackle is an area that needs addressed. I always like building from the inside out with the O&D line. But when you're talking a top three pick and you have those quarterbacks available, I mean, unless they trade back, which I know would just infuriate everyone for more picks, I think you have to go quarterback really.
Would do you think it'd be a touch too far to trade up in the draft to ensure that you get one? Like if you're in a fear that somebody in the Patriots would be willing to trade back with somebody like the Giants, who obviously need a quarterback, would it be a touch too far to get in on the mix on that and like jump up to one?
Oh man, that's slippery slope, because then you're talking about really, really putting all your eggs in one basket again. And the fact that you still have Deshaun Watson on the roster and you're trading away more assets to bring in a quarterback for a competition, that is kind of unsettling to me, at least if I'm just being, you know, honest. Now that's not to say that they won't do that. And you know, the powers to be are thinking, hey, look, this is our shot. This is our opportunity. We have to, we've gotten to this point. You know, we have to do whatever it takes to win now. So I wouldn't put it past them, but do I think that that's the best move for the future? Probably not, to, you know, potentially get rid of more picks and give up more capital to take a shot on really an unsure thing, because let's be honest. I mean, the draft picks haven't been home runs, and you never know. I mean, you know, to my earlier point with the instant success that some of these younger quarterbacks have had, that's not to say that this is going to happen with these top prospects this year. That's not to say that a guy that's, you know, slipping to maybe the later first round or even a diamond in the rough that's in a later round is going to be great. So it's just such an unsure thing with rookie quarterbacks. You have to bring them in. The speed changes. The preparation is different. The defenses, you know, the responsibility on these quarterbacks is a lot different. The offenses are different. You know, who knows what the offense is going to look like in Cleveland next year. There's other pieces, you know, in the equation that need addressed. So it's a lot of big ifs, guys. And for them to do that, they would have to, that would really surprise me. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they won't do it.
John, we've obviously come a very far way from at the start of the season, preseason, the expectations this team had. I mean, there was talks about this team being like a dark horse Super Bowl contender. And now here we are talking about, you know, number three overall pick, maybe even higher in the draft. Did we just flat out overrate the talent on this Browns roster and you know, maybe think that they were better than what they really are?
I'm still trying to figure that out, and that's the million-dollar question. And it really sucks because, you know, at this point in the season, we were expecting them to you know, be in the conversation where this game was the primetime game for the division. Or at very least, you know, we were gearing up to wait to see how things, you know, would shake out to see who we're playing in the wild card game. That was kind of what everybody was expecting, at least what I was expecting going into the season after 11-6 last year, and really, you know, handling the teams in our division the way that we have. But you know, the glaring deficiencies keep, you know, rearing their ugly head. The turnovers, the pre-snap penalties, the penalties in general, the lackluster, you know, red zone offense, the lack of explosive plays, the injuries, and I know that you can't blame really anybody for that. That's just bad luck. But the injuries have shown up again, and every team has that, but they just haven't been able to overcome the adversity this year. And that's when fans get upset and you start pointing fingers and trying to find who's to blame. But yeah, overall, it's very disappointing to go from a playoff team and you know, not looking great in Houston, but at least they were able to go in this year and say, okay, hey, you know, look, that's where we were. That's the bar. Let's try to win the division. Let's be more competitive and win a playoff game this year. And for them to come out and look the way they did, it's just a kind of a head scratcher. And it leaves me to believe that they've taken such a step back that I don't know that we can just automatically assume that they're going to be back to that 11-6 look. I think that they have a lot of problems to fix. And, you know, I hope whoever's in that building can address that and get it done next year.
John Greco joining us on the show. Along those lines, John, we talk about the draft and decisions that have to be made there. We talk about the roster and decisions that have to be made there. How much trust at this point do you and maybe should fans have in Andrew Berry to get this team, get the nose up on this plane of a team that he's assembled and that obviously woefully underperformed this year?
Well, look, I've heard the owner of the team continue to endorse Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, and that's ultimately who has the final say, and whoever's in his circle of trust and whoever's in making those decisions, that's ultimately for them to say. I think, you know, obviously that the draft track record and some of the free agent moves, you know, Jerry Jeudy is starting to pay dividends, and he's looking obviously like he could be a number one receiver of the future. But, you know, some of the picks just, you know, guys aren't even on the roster anymore. And when they had limited opportunities and they had to hit on those picks, they just didn't happen. So, you know, you were hoping to see kind of some young guys flourish late in the season with more opportunities, and either they're hurt or they're really not getting their names called for a variety of reasons because the games are so lopsided. But the fact that this quarterback room looks the way it does, and then you have Tyler Huntley coming out, who was in the Browns quarterback room earlier this year, and obviously, you know, he tears them apart. And there's just the nature of the NFL, there's going to be turnover. So a lot of the faces and the names that were here this year are not going to be here next year. And some of the guys that were picked or brought in are going to that maybe weren't producing just because of the fact that they're under contract. So do I have the faith? I'm going to, you know, use a cop-out answer and still say, you know, if they're given another opportunity, this is obviously their last chance. So they need, I need to see things happen. They have to hit, they have to have success, successful draft picks and make moves in the off season to bring in some key players to plug those holes and see if they make a big flip, because you could go from worst to first. Teams have done that. So I want to give them the benefit of the doubt again, if they're still in the building and making those decisions this offseason, which it looks like they're going to be, according to Mr. Haslam. But I want to give them one more chance, because this time next year, guys, if things look different and we're in that playoff conversation, none of this is going to matter. It's all going to be ancient history. But I want to see them give one more crack at it.
It's no shock to anybody that the Browns benefit going into next year from losing games here at the end of the year. And teams in general do this, just sort of put themselves in a position to then pick up a better draft pick. How aware are players of essentially like tanking when it's happening? And do they pick up on the cues that teams are doing that within towards the end of the season by the decisions they make?
Players hear that word, and, you know, this is no secret. Players don't care about that. That the players are not tanking, trust me. There are some guys that maybe look like they're mentally checked out and ready to go on vacation, and you know, whatever their contract situation may be, you know, they could get away with that. Maybe they can't, or they're hurt, whatever. But the guys that are out there, you know, like a guy like Myles Garrett, guys like Joel Bitonio, some veterans that, you know, they could easily say, hey, look, this need, it's been bothering me for the last 2 months. I'm going to shut it down. But they're not those guys. And those aren't the guys you want on the team, trust me. I played on a lot of bad teams, guys, and the superstars that I played with, the better teammates, the good professionals, want to play in this game. I know it sucks, and the fans don't want to hear that, and the fans don't want them to win, to screw up the draft status. I get that. I'm a fan now. I'm very well aware of that. But when you're in that building, this is your job. So when your job sucks and you're going as a plumber, a mailman, or whatever you're doing, you're working in retail and it's raining, and you want to go, you still go. And that's what these guys are doing. They're playing for pride. This is their job. They're trying to feed their families, build a better life for their families, for the future, for themselves, and to improve their job security, whether it be for this team or another team in the league. So they don't want to hear that crap. Trust me. They're going. They're trying to spoil the Ravens season. They're trying to get a win and finish on a high note and build some positivity into the offseason at the very least.
John, as we talk about the Browns, as Jake alluded to, sort of like losing here towards the end of the season to get a better draft pick, I'm just curious from your perspective as a former player, like, are players aware of, I'm assuming they're aware of like that narrative and that storyline, especially from fans, but do they pick up on decisions that the team may make to potentially lean into that a little bit? Because I'm under the belief, like, I don't know that the Browns are actively tanking, but it did feel like, you know, starting DTR, who's this project of a quarterback that they didn't really know what they were going to get out of him, is not necessarily a move that endorses, like, hey, we're going out and winning. So I guess, like, how, when you're in the locker room setting, when you're part of a team, how prevalent is, how aware are players of that sort of the ongoings of what the team's trying to do in that instance?
Yeah, you know, you kind of feel some of those decisions, and, you know, I'm assuming Jameis is hurt, okay, so
yeah,
because Jameis gives you the best chance to win. I mean, I get it, the turnovers, but when he was in there, like it or not, they were moving the ball and scoring points and, you know, scoring over 20 points. So, you know, that guy gives you the best chance of winning right now with this quarterback room. So let's just—he's hurt, okay. So they're not making the decision. We're assuming that hey, Jameis, you're good enough to go, but we're just not playing you. We're playing DTR. Now, if that's the narrative, you know, I don't know if players know that. You know, it's not that it's secretive, but you know, you kind of hear these things. It's like, oh, who we got this week? Who's playing? Who's spinning the ball? And then you hear it's DTR, and then it's hey, let's go, man. Let's put this guy in the best position to win. So, you know, if it's a situation where you have, a franchise quarterback and they're like, hey, look, you know, we're shutting you down. We know that cash isn't bothering you. You know, you're out, and we're playing a rookie that's, you know, had 50 snaps in his career. Then, you know, you're going to start scratching your head and you're going to say, well, okay, that's obviously what they're trying to do. But, you know, just how the Browns are trying to play spoiler with the Ravens, guys in that building, they're going to say, okay, that's what they think of us. They're trying to they're worrying about the picks. You know, screw that. Let's go out and win this game. We might not be here next year. And right now, are they worried about me as an individual or the team? Me as an individual has to play my best game. And that's all that those individuals can do as part of the unit and part of the team. Play their individual game. Put whoever's back at quarterback in the best position to win and have success. And that would be the mindset. At least that was mine in my illustrious career of losing seasons every year.
He's John Greco, former Cleveland Brown turned NFL analyst. We appreciate him stopping by each and every single week on this very show. John, take care of yourself. Have a good time at the party tonight, and Happy New Year to you and the family.
Happy New Year, John.
Guys, Happy New Year. Go Browns.
So we have a couple of different things we got to get to here, because the stadium conversation rolls right along, Jake. The two sides just keep going back and forth. But I do think it's a fascinating question on whether or not we overrated this roster. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday. And I thought it was interesting that, like, John doesn't really have an answer. Like, it's kind of this, like, mysterious, like, what happened? Why didn't it work? Because I believed in my heart of hearts, like, this roster's talented, and I still do think it's pretty talented. Like, the people who are like, clearly there's nobody good on this roster other than Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward and a few others, I don't think that's true. I just think it's about last year, those players that are in that middle sort of tier of players on your team, they played above what you'd expect from them. And I think this year they played below that. I think it's fair to say that, like, year to year, things kind of change with players. But I don't know. Like, I still believe this team is pretty talented, and that they can get this thing righted by finding the right pieces and parts to sort of fill in the cracks. I don't know that it was a lack of talent. I think it's more so, as you hear these guys talk about the penalties still being a problem, turnover still being a problem, I think it's more just about execution and guys just not being, you know, playing up to their potential this year than anything.
My big thing is, where is the talent? Like, point to me somewhere where you find a vast amount of talent on the Cleveland Browns, other than Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward. You can throw in Joel Bitonio. Does it stop there at this point? Like, Jerry Jeudy, I will toss in that conversation. Outside of that, I don't know where the vast amount of talent comes from. JOK, obviously, but you don't know what's happening with his career. Aside from that, it's I look at a bunch of different positions and guys who didn't perform this year. You can say they underperformed. I also think you probably overrated the talent. Juan Thornhill, overpaid, overrated the talent. He has done nothing for you.
Well, but we knew that. We kind of wondered about Juan Thornhill after last year. Like, he was hurt most of the year, didn't play a ton. So I don't know. Like, I can say Grant Delpit has proven to me he's a good in-the-box safety. I think the secondary is largely pretty talented with Denzel at the forefront of that. Greg Newsome hasn't lived up to being a first-round pick, but I do think he's a fine corner in this league. And I also think that you have, again, with Grant Delpit back there, I think that's something. And I still have hope for MJ Emerson. I think the defensive line has some players that are you traded Za'Darius Smith. And I know Dalvin hasn't had, like, a tremendous season, but I don't think he's, like, awful. Maybe you have to make a change there. But, you know, when you had Za'Darius Smith when the season started, I did feel like with him and Myles Garrett, you felt pretty good about the pass rush up front. I don't think that group was a problem. It was just that you weren't going to keep Za'Darius Smith on this roster.
That's the problem. None of the groups are necessarily, there are groups that are a problem, but the best that I can point to is that the group's not a problem. It was supposed to be a playoff team that was, we talked about it yesterday, dark horses for a Super Bowl.
But I don't know, man.
Like, it's not just not a problem. You have to have star groups, and the Browns have none. There's no star group on this team.
See, I don't know, though. Like, you look around this league, and you can find teams that have, like, a number of players that stand out, and then they have, like, other guys that you don't really know their name, and they just have, like, their groups are fine. Like the Lions, for example. Lions have the best offense in football this year, but their defense has dealt with so many injuries at this point that, like, they're on, like, second and third stringers who are starting for them. And they're still finding ways to win because their offense is so great and they're getting key stops and moments. I just think those guys are, in a year where they feel like a snowball effect where it's just rolling downhill, they're playing above their level. Like, some of these guys are just playing better this season on a good team. I think that happens. I think on some level we saw last year some guys played above their level. But I think every team has that problem. Like, no team has great offensive line, great quarterback, great wide receivers, great on all levels of the defense. You're always going to have areas that are weaknesses.
Always. But I just find, I do not see a unit with this team that I'm like, that's a Super Bowl caliber unit. I have Super Bowl caliber players. I have Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, JOK. There's no unit. There's no consistency, and there's just not enough of it. Hey, there's no way that I can sit here and look at this team and the way that it's built out right now and say, yeah, this team is still the talented team that can go win a Super Bowl. There's no way. Even the team that walked into this year, the guys that you traded away, Za'Darius Smith wasn't having a great season. I don't think he's a bad DN. I think you were fine there. I agree with you. Amari Cooper wasn't what you expected him to be. You thought he was going to be a lot better.
That's part of the problem, too, is, like, I think you clearly thought your wide receiver room was pretty taken care of, where you have Jerry Jeudy, who you traded for, and Amari Cooper as the headliner, and then Amari Cooper had his maybe worst season of his career. I mean, he was bad at the start of the season.
I think that you look at this team in a front office who basically sat on their hands this offseason and said, we'll run it back because it went well this year. And you talk about the snowball effect of going downhill. That was last year. You get guys to play above the level, and you're like, well, yeah, this group's great. We'll pay a couple of guys. We'll keep everybody around. What could go wrong? Well, no, your team was firing on all cylinders. You can't expect that to stay the same way. So you went in with this high evaluation of every single player who was stepping up into a group with high energy that was always succeeding. And it was sort of easy to fill in that role because guys were playing above where they were, because that's what happens on good teams. You play above your level. They went in with that same expectation, and they were let down when they see what you actually have in terms of talent. The wide receiver group decimated. The running back group decimated. I mean, you have, between those two groups, one guy that I'm confident in, Jerry Jeudy.
We have to pivot because the stadium conversation rolls on and on. We know from the updates McKenzie's been giving that, and we saw the come down yesterday, that the city of Cleveland is fully invoking the Art Modell law and pursuing it and using it as a way to force the Haslams to at least put this team up for sale, which is part of the law there, that if they're moving the team out of a tax-funded facility, that they have to at least put it up for sale and give somebody an option to buy it. Obviously, this is being fought in court already, because I know the Haslams asked for clarification in federal court of the Art Modell law. And their whole point is, well, we are not taking the team out of even I guess technically they're taking it. No, they're not taking it out of the county, but they are taking it out of the city barely on property that used to belong to the city. And so this is the latest strong arm from the city to do to try to hold up the process here, which doesn't make any sense, partially because all we've heard from our own beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, is that the city doesn't even care if the Browns really leave. So I don't know why. It's all just political posturing. It's all just silly. But the latest now is that the Browns have put out a statement in response to this where they're kind of just towing the same sort of political line they have been. You know, they're not really saying much. But basically, we received and are reviewing the correspondence from Mayor Bibb. As we stated months ago, we filed the lawsuit seeking clarity on the Modell Law. The statute and the city's actions create uncertainty and do not serve the interest of Greater Cleveland. As the city knows, after the 2028 season, we all fulfilled our lease obligations at the current stadium. We are determined to create a project to solve our long-term stadium planning by building a new enclosed Huntington Bank Field and adjacent mixed-use development, resulting in a substantial increase in premier large-scale events and economic activity. You kind of get the gist from there. But basically, like, that's the other big kicker here. The facility that they play in now, the whole thing is if you leave before the lease is up. They're not leaving before the lease is up. They are going to play there until the lease expires in 2028, and then they're going to go play somewhere else. And the statute, the law also stipulates, like, unless you find another county or another city or whatever is accepting a new place for you to play and like a new partner essentially to do that. That like they have that in Brook Park. They have a place. They have a plan. They've mapped it all out. I don't understand how the Art Modell Law can get sort of used here as a tool to make force the Haslams to try to sell when they're going to fulfill the requirements of the Art Modell Law and what it states that you're supposed to do.
The big thing for me is this is not why the law was put into place. The law was put into place because the Browns were moved fully out of Cleveland into a whole different state,
right?
Whole different city turned into an entirely different team.
Exactly.
Right. You're basically trying to maneuver the wording so the Browns stay inside of the city of downtown Cleveland, so you can continue for another two decades to do nothing for the team, to do nothing to back the team and make the experience for fans better, to make the experience in downtown Cleveland to enjoy a Browns game better. The Browns have given the city millions upon millions of dollars in revenue just by simply sitting there and playing there, and everybody that comes with it, and the city's done nothing back to give to the Browns. Very little, right? Maybe nothing is too far. They've done very little to give back to the Browns. Yeah, the land bridge, that never passed. The lakefront has been, there's been plans to rebuild the lakefront, I mean, probably since young Jeff Phelps and Annie Baskin were walking around in diapers. Okay, like there's never been anything. It makes no sense. And again, now you're trying to use this wording to essentially keep the Browns from moving 15 minutes down the road when it was meant to stop them from moving 15 hours across the country.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing that makes no sense. It's like they're misinterpreting the law entirely. And again, I don't know what they're hanging onto. Like at this point, it's happening. The city. The West 6 tailgate shows that we used to do, they stopped existing this year because the city said they couldn't control what was going on there. Like, all this economic impact that you talk about being a thing that you're trying to preserve here, like, that's not even coming to fruition because the things that are built around the game can't even exist right now. It's mind-boggling. The whole thing's crazy. We'll get to some of your calls on this, 216-474-0092. Also coming up, guys, the Cavaliers have been playing out of their minds so far this season, but is what we're seeing transferable to the playoffs? 216-474-0092 on X as well, at Spencito underscore at Volnick Jake is where you can find both of us. I do want to open up Twitter reactions, which are brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We have a couple of different things we could do here. First of all, we were talking about the quarterback situation earlier, Jake, and our good friend Jared Swoop from yesterday. He said, "How dare you, sir? Kenny Pickett is right up Kevin Stefanski's alley. Strong arm, pocket passer. Kenny Pickett will lead us to the Super Bowl, Super Browns." That's what he says. So from an earlier conversation, we also have R. Clark 333 saying, "Delpit, Newsom, JOK, DTR, Ward. Do we have the most undersized players in the league on this team? Walking injuries waiting to happen." So that was, I think, in response to you asking me whether or not, like, where I could find talent on the roster, essentially. So there you go. That's Twitter reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We do want to get to the Cavs here in a second, but Lance and Painesville want to jump in on the stadium thing. What's up, Lance?
What's going on, Lance?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing? How you guys got
though? Good, man. What's up?
I just do a quick super comments, if you allow me. One, I think people did overestimate the talent on this Browns team, because I heard a lot of people saying that if this team had a bad season, it was strictly because Deshaun Watson, and people were still thinking Cooper was the number one receiver. I've always argued against that. But the second point, Justin Bibb, what he's trying to do, he has to do that as a politician. I mean, people who are Cleveland Browns fans who don't live in city Cleveland limits, I can understand why they would side with Jimmy Haslam and, you know, building a dome, a multiplex situation. But he has to fight. If he wants to get reelected as mayor of Cleveland, people who live in the city of Cleveland, people who own businesses that live in the city of Cleveland, who work in the city of Cleveland, he at least has to have the appearance that he's fighting to do everything to keep Cleveland Browns physically playing in the city of Cleveland. He has to do what he's doing. I know it's a nuisance. I know it may be annoying a lot of people who are Browns fans that don't live in Cleveland. So I don't live in Cleveland either. So it's personally not affecting me if the Browns move to another city. But I'm supposed that maybe you and Jake, maybe you guys are in the same boat. You don't live in the city of Cleveland.
No.
So you want to, you just want to see the best, you know, facility the Browns playing. And the dome, I've always wanted a dome stadium for the Browns. I wanted them to get a dome back in 99. But, you know, I get it. It's the billionaire versus the city of Cleveland. But Justin Bibb has to do what he's doing. He has to give the citizens, people to put him in office. He has to give them the appearance. I'm fighting to keep this team here, even if deep down he knows he's not going to win this battle. You know, but he has to fight, just like Michael Wade fought way back then when the Browns left and went to Baltimore. He's doing the same thing.
I got you, Lance. And listen, I appreciate the call, and I understand what you're saying. It's the political posturing. It's the game you have to play. Fine. But at the same time, I think it's the way that like they're going about it, because like we laid out, the law was put in place to keep teams from being shipped to San Antonio and like a team legitimately like moving out of and leaving the area. That's not what's happening here. Like the Haslams have, since day one of this entire plan, made it clear that they were trying to keep the Browns in Northeast Ohio. Like that's been the goal from the start. So I just think it's disingenuous on part of Mayor Bibb's office in the city to essentially be like, hey, we're enforcing this law. And one of the other part of it too is like the parameters of the law are going to be met. It only applies if you don't fulfill the time that you're playing in a tax-funded facility. They're going to finish this lease. It ends in 2028. So the Haslams are doing all the things to make sure that the parameters of the law are met, and then they take the team to Brook Park. And again, I'm not trying to side with the Haslams, because there's a lot of things the Haslams have done wrong with this organization, but this isn't one of those things that I think they're doing wrong. I understand what the big picture vision kind of is here, and it just seems like the city is just like getting in the way of progress and completely using, you know, the wording of this law in a way that it wasn't intended to, and manipulating the situation in their favor, which I don't agree with.
Yeah, that's all it is. If you really wanted to keep the Browns in Cleveland, you would devise a better plan than what has been proposed. It's literally, we'll take what's there right now, which is already, you know, I don't want to say it's falling apart, but it's on the brink, and completely outdated, not up to where every other stadium in the NFL is for the most part, and you would have devised a plan to get you something better, not like, hey, we'll put in all this money so this thing doesn't fall down. You would have actually proposed a plan to have something built or a complete renovation to keep the Browns here. You'd have been willing to put up the money for that or find a way to devise the money to be, you know, kept here and the Browns would stay in Cleveland. You didn't do that. You put together a plan that was nothing, and then you're basically going to terrible, like, fail-safes to just say, hey, look what we're doing. We have this here. We'll put this out when you know you have no chance of getting it.
We'll get to the Cavs here coming up. Let's go to Tom in Brook Park, where the new stadium is going to likely be built. Tom, what's going on?
What's going on, Tom?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think you're all right on this as much to do about nothing and posturing. But the reality is this. Let's just say the three of us had the Browns are worth $6 billion. and we have the money to buy them. We would require the same venue that the Haslams are going to require, because it's the cost of having a competitive team in the NFL. And that's what this is all about. And there's, you know, there's an agreement to reach here. You guys touched on it. The lakefront, we've talked about it forever. Cleveland doesn't have the ability to offer the venue to the Haslams. So the return that they can have not only can make them money, but promulgate a winning team in the future. Let's open up that lakefront. I'm sure that Haslams would contribute to the demolition of the stadium. I had a good friend make a suggestion the other day. All of us go to Blossom. We enjoy Blossom. How about if we tear down Brown Stadium, open the whole lakefront, and move Blossom and put it right on the lake? What an amenity that would be, and what kind of revenue that would generate downtown. But the Cleveland Browns should come to Brook Park. It's the best venue, and I think down the line that the county and the city should look at getting out of the whole gateway agreements where there's a cash call every so many years for $10 or $20 million. They should give those facilities to the teams. They're yours. You keep the parking revenue. You take care of the parks. And let's get the public entities about what we ought to be about, and it's providing for needs of the residents. But this thing here is a bunch about nothing, because you'd have to question the sanity of someone buying the Browns that couldn't get a return from a venue like what's required to be in the NFL today. That's all.
Yeah, no, Tom, I appreciate the call. Thanks, Tom. I think that's pretty well said on a couple fronts. First and foremost, I think you're right. Like, if anyone else were to buy the team, they'd still have the same problem. Like, are they going to just willingly play in this stadium that's falling apart on the lakefront? Probably not. And I do think, yes, the lakefront has a lot of potential for what you can do with it. I think getting rid of the stadium means they can invest in actually developing it the way that they've said they were going to do from even before I was ever in Cleveland. So we'll see if that actually would come to fruition. But yeah, like, it's a political thing at this point. In the same vein though, Jake, like, I get where they have to do it for the sake of the city, but I also feel like there's plenty of people in the city who are seeing this, and they think to themselves, why are we wasting our time fighting about this stadium when we do have, like, to Tom's point, there are other things that you could be investing money and time into that need attention rather than just this.
I feel like it also, does it not look the other way, look bad if you lose this whole thing after you just invested all of this time and resources and everything into it, and then the Haslams take the Browns and leave anyway, when you could have devoted the time elsewhere?
It goes both ways to an extent, but, you know, I don't know. It all just seems so silly and contrived in the end. Nick on the road. What's up, Nick?
The problem is they don't really want to make a decision or have to be put to work on what goes there after the stadium leaves. I think the thing you got to, you know, realize is this isn't uncommon in the NFL or in professional sports, period, where teams don't play in the city that the moniker is. Like, the Cowboys don't play in Dallas. The right. Niners don't play in San Francisco. The Jets and the Giants don't play in New York City. The Redskins or the Commanders don't play in D.C. Like, it's not that big of a deal, but it puts pressure on Cleveland government to actually put something into that space that'll make money. If they were looking at this in the right way, they'd actually realize the opportunity that they now had with that land. The amphitheater idea was great. My personal opinion is take that Mickey Mouse thing they call a casino next to the queue, move it to the lake. You have a lakefront hotel and casino. You can make boatloads of hotel tax. Like, the city could actually make more money by getting rid of that stadium and putting something in there that's going to make more money and generate more revenue outside of maybe, what, 12 or 13 days a year, because you have a concert there every once in a while in the summer. The fact of the matter is that you guys are right, it's political. The political powers that be, they don't want to have to do any work. That's what this is all about. Happy New Year, guys.
All right, Nick. Happy appreciate New Year, the Nick. Comment. Happy New Year to you.